Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. I'm your host, and this is MJ Network. And we are really, really thrilled and excited because this is my last show for 2018. And what better way to end it than with the author of one of my favorite new books and favorite new author, Stephen James. And we've got Every Wicked Man, The Bowers Files. When a senator's son takes his own life and streams the video live online, well, Agent Bowers is drawn into a complex web of lies that begins to threaten the people he loves the most. As he races to unravel the mystery behind the suicide, a centuries-old code that might help shed light on the case, he finds a dark pathway laced with twists and deadly secrets that touch a little too close to home. And that's all I'm going to say. And I'm going to tell you that the author is here, and he's going to tell more. Hi, good morning. How are you? This is exciting.
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Hanging in there. So I take it this is not the first book in the series. This is one of the latest book that just came out in September. So give listeners some idea of the history of Bowers and how he came to meet his new wife and his stepdaughter.
Yeah, actually, this is the last book in the series, and so I've
oh,
been writing
gosh.
This series for the last 12 years, and. But many years ago, when I was, I wanted to write a series featuring an FBI agent or an investigator, and I was doing all this research on investigative techniques, and most authors are either doing something with criminal profiling or with forensics, like DNA and stuff like that, television shows and also other authors, and I was like, I want something different, something unique that hasn't been done before, and I stumbled across this investigative technique called geospatial investigation or geoprofiling, where you study the timing, location, and progression of serial crimes. And so I thought that's pretty interesting, and the more research I did, and then I started to consult with some of the leading people who do that in the world, and so I said this is perfect for my series. So Patrick Bowers is an FBI agent who's an environmental criminologist. He studies the locations of crimes, and he does this geospatial investigation where he looks at all of these different factors regarding where and when a crime took place and then try to work backwards to find the likely location of the killer, let's say the killer's home base. So, for instance, when I was talking with the guy who basically invented this technique, he said, if you can show me all of the places where a water sprinkler in a lawn has sprinkled water, I can tell you where the sprinkler was. I can't necessarily tell you where the next drop of water will fall, but I can tell you where the sprinkler was. And that's what we're trying to do with this technique. It's not really predictive in the sense that you can tell where the next crime will occur, but by looking at all those data points, you can work backward to the most likely location of the home base. And so that was the idea that I started writing this series with, and over the course of the last 12 years, wrote 11 books in this series. And so this is the last one and the most recent one. But it's actually a good place to start reading because it's a prequel to the rest of the series.
See, that's not fair. I just started to like this guy, and I was ready to read more about him.
And the last chapter,
I won't give it away. Like I said, okay, well, maybe there'll be more with these two, whatever. And that's just, like, not fair. Okay.
Well,
so,
like I say, it is a prequel, so you do hear the next, like, eight books are all about the character. Patrick Bowers, and then this girl Tessa, who's ends up being his stepdaughter, and so you'll find much more about their relationship in the coming books.
Oh, good. That gives me hope. Because I like Tessa, and it's rare for, you know, stepdaughter. That's great. So that first scene gave me the creeps. How did you create the scene with Timothy and the bugs? And how come you chose that illness? Oh, my God. I mean, the minute I see anything on the floor, I go like, oh, get me out of here. I don't want to know. And if I see a bug crawling, it's like, ew. So how did you create that? And that's really interesting because no one's ever done that before either.
Yeah, this disease or syndrome, they really don't even know what to call it. It's called Morgellons.
Mm-hmm.
And basically you have the feeling of bugs crawling across your skin constantly.
And
you itch at them, but it doesn't stop, and it ends up causing some mental deterioration over time. It's just a pretty terrifying kind of experience to go through. And they're not sure what causes this either, but there have been quite a number of cases recorded, and so I thought, that's really creepy, and I want to use it for my book. So when you're a thriller writer and you write suspense, you come across something like that, you're like, all right, I got to use that in my story. So he struggles with this, and he's actually seeing a psychologist in that scene, or a psychiatrist, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's hears this voice, and he doesn't trust the voice, but the voice says, go ahead and kill him, just like the others. And he's like, there haven't been any others. But in his mind, he's, oh, yes, there have. And so readers don't really know if this guy has killed other people or not. He's tempted in this way. And so it creates this really interesting character that we feel sorry for on the one hand, but we're also a little afraid of on the other, because we don't really know what he's done and what he's capable of doing.
That's what makes him really creepy and scary. And I won't even tell you how many books I read and the ones that I'm reading that I started, and like, oh my God, scary, very scary. It's amazing that I don't have all these nightmares from reviewing all these books, but sometimes you know. But they give you ideas for writing other things too. So we've got Christy, and she went to a retreat. But she sort of like disappeared, so why didn't she tell them that she was going? Because they tried to, you know, Tessa said that she was going to call her all the time in Bowers, but she didn't tell them where she went, and she didn't say anything about it. How come?
Well, in this story, so Patrick and Christy are together, and Christy was a single mom who raised this girl, Tessa, by herself. Mm-hmm. And so when Patrick ends up with Christy, they end up with this, he has this kind of stepdaughter that he doesn't really know very well, but he wants to love and he wants to care for, but he's not sure how to do that or what that will mean. And so it's this interesting relationship that they have of a father and a daughter, but they don't really know each other, and they're trying to figure out what that relationship will look like. And so Christy ends up going away and in a bit of a shrouded way. She doesn't really explain too much, and goes away on this spiritual encounter retreat, and so leaves them wondering what's going on. And as readers read the book, then they'll find out kind of why Christy did that and what's on her mind and what her kind of struggle is. You know, when I look at a story, I always look for the characters, what they struggle with. And so I like to think of each character as having an internal struggle, like a question they're trying to resolve. And so in this case, Christy has definitely a big internal struggle, and readers will find out what that is as the story progresses.
Well, that's true, and I'm not going to say what it is. but, you know, so many of the books I've read, and I've read so many, I lost count a long time ago, some of the struggles don't seem real, but this is like a human struggle. This makes sense. And when you can get an insight into her, you say, oh, okay, why did she do that? But you understand why she did it, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah.
Okay, the part that really got me interested, I mean, scary, is why would you went on a site, because I read something that you wrote, about suicides and people watching videos of people that actually kill themselves. So he gets called to handle the suicide of a senator's son, but he doesn't believe that it's really suicide. What happens if somebody actually watches somebody kill themselves as it's happening? Aren't they responsible to do something? Or what happens if they don't? And how come you chose that? That was absolutely unique, let me tell you. I was like, I've read like 9,000, literally 9,000 books, and I said, oh, my God, this is really unique. Between that and the bugs, oh, my God.
Well, you know, the thing is, in our culture today, it's becoming more and more common for people to film either suicides or even murders,
yeah,
and live stream them through Facebook or through YouTube or other online social platforms. And so when I came across that, it was really chilling to me, and I thought, man, that's just terrifying that people would do that and that others would watch, but they do watch. And it isn't just the live ones, but people will click in and watch, like, beheadings from terrorists
and
all sorts of, terrifying things like that. But we have this kind of, I guess, attraction to see the suffering of others. And I think it's part of human nature, and it's a terrifying part of human nature. But it's one of the reasons that we slow down when we see an accident on the highway and kind of peer over there to sort of rubberneck and see, if we can see what's happened and if there's someone hurt or injured or maybe even dead. And so when I came across this kind of trend of people live streaming crimes and death and suicides, I thought it was really chilling, and it would be a good way. You know, in my stories, I try to explore things in our culture that are really applicable, that are really happening. And so as far as if it's against the law to watch that or something, it officially is not. You can watch someone, unless you're maybe a doctor or a medic or something like that. But according to the laws in most states, you can actually watch someone kill himself, and as long as you don't do anything to assist with it, you're not going to be held responsible. But if you assist in some way or help facilitate that, then you're held more responsible. Now, that's legally responsible. Morally, I think that's a little different because, I mean, I would certainly try to do something to help, as I think most people probably would. It becomes sort of this moral morass where you're not really sure what the character should do, and that always creates the quandary, creates interesting storylines.
I'm just wondering, with some people, you know, there are people that are delusional out there, and then there are people that realize that this is really real, and I wonder how many of them watch it and say, it's not really happening, I'm just watching a video, and don't realize, guess what, this is really happening.
Yeah, that does happen. I mean, people, when this has happened in different platforms, people have written in and say, oh, I know you're just faking this, and this isn't really real and stuff like that. And some people have tried to call in to the cops, and if they see something like this. So the reactions of people are quite different. And some people just sit and watch. And so, as an author, you almost have to be, in a certain sense, kind of a psychologist. You have to look at human nature and the different ways that people react and respond to different situations, and then, you know, go ahead and try to tell those honestly in your story. And so you see both the good parts of human nature and then the ones that aren't quite so good.
Well, you have to have flaws and you have to have some bad things. If it was too perfect, it would be, no one would want to read it. I mean,
exactly.
You have to have something so we've at the funeral for the senator's son. There's a woman that comes out, so how come he chases her, and who is Manny, and why does he help save someone and gets arrested? that was interesting.
Well,
too. Yeah, I left out something over there. Okay, that's good.
This character Manny is from a previous book, and we meet him. He's kind of a bodyguard for one of the master villains in this series, and but he acts in a way that's a little bit inexplicable.
Like
we don't really, we don't really know if he's good or evil, if he's on the side of the FBI or if he's not, and he becomes a character that you know, readers kind of really do enjoy being with and sort of experiencing this character. And so at the funeral of the senator's son who had taken his own life, you know, Patrick ends up kind of watching to see if there's anything suspicious going on, and ends up in a chase scene with this young woman, and eventually Manny shows up out of nowhere. And so Patrick wonders, you know, if he's responsible in some way with this death, and it creates a lot of questions and really propels the story forward.
Oh, I like Manny, even if he's bad. Sometimes bad people really are good. Yeah, he could have destroyed him a couple of times. So we've got four other characters, and then I'm going to talk about the fact that I realize that this book was told from six points of view. I got that. Got that loud and clear. I got that loud and clear. Okay, so we have almost this question over here. Just tuck them all together. We've got Bauer, who's trying to solve the suicide murder, right? We've got Julianne, who is a cop and is into photography but works from the point of view of three Blake Nielsen, undercover cop, now criminal, dealing in sex trafficking. I spelled that wrong on my paper. Sex and human trafficking. Then we get point four, Bauer's new wife, Christy, hiding something, which we won't say what that is. And then we've got Tessa, who is Bauer's stepdaughter. And we have Sasha Day and Jake Reese. How did you come up with six viewpoints that I got? Seriously, there's so many viewpoints.
It's fascinating.
Every time you changed, I said, oh my God, I could actually figure out it's another character. Usually when that happens, I go like, what the heck, who are they talking about this time? Who is it? How did you do that? That was absolutely genius, seriously.
Yeah, when I write my stories, I almost always have, you know, Patrick Bauers is the main character, and most of the story is told from his perspective or point of view. But there are some scenes where he's not always present, and so someone else is, you know, is present. And so I wanted to find a way to tell the story without forcing Patrick to be in every single scene of the book. And so to do that, then you need to have other characters' perspective, and so. So it ends up with each of the characters who has a major role in the book or, you know, a major struggle in the book, like Christy or Tessa. These characters I like to have with their own point of view. And managing that isn't always easy, but I think it's essential to really, you know, keep the reader oriented to what's going on. And as soon as you, as Steve Barry says, as soon as you confuse your reader, you lose your reader. And so trying to always keep the readers grounded, you know, in what's happening and why it's important and, you know, what point of view the story is being told from is kind of a fun game for me to do. And so I always enjoy that. And I don't even always know how many point of views I'm going to tell a story from when I start writing it. And, you know, sometimes it's one or two or three. Sometimes it's in this case, you said there's six. I didn't even realize there were six, but
I got all six in them. Trust me. That's what people complain about, that I usually get more than they want to know. No, I got it. And I went through it a couple of times and go like, okay, wait a minute. We got this one, this one, this one, this one. And it was interesting. And you know what else was interesting? And I didn't put it in my questions, but I'm looking through the book, which is in front of me. You had different sections had different titles. Each section had. How did you do that? One says denial was number one, and then it goes to the end. It goes to a different section at the very end. How did you come up with all of those? Stage five is something else. So why did you decide to make it like in five different stages or six different stages?
Each of the sections of the book, and I think there's five or six, but each of those relates to what's called the different stages of grief. So Mm-hmm. Christy ends up going through these stages of grief as the story progresses, and so the first stage is denial. And so mm-hmm. that ended up being the way that I framed the story, was through the stages of grief. And mm-hmm. so eventually it leads to the final stage, which is acceptance, and that's the final section of the book. So I've never seen a book that was shaped that way. And I feel like mm-hmm. every story needs its own kind of shape. I don't write according to a formula. I don't try to have every book mm-hmm. have three acts and a certain number of pages in, you introduce the subplot and then you introduce the main plot or whatever, and 25% of the way in you introduce this plot or that plot or whatever. That's never worked for me, and I've never even really tried to do that. I feel like it's too predictable. So instead, I just try to sort the story out as I write it. I don't outline or plot anything out. I write organically, trying to listen to the story and follow where it goes. And in this case, that ended up being what felt like honest to the story. And so, yeah, so it ends up being shaped by those stages of grief.
Well, I'm going to bring in something in a minute. I've got this book in front of me because I don't want to leave out anything, especially something that was on the back cover, but I will in a minute. So we get to learn more about Timothy and his connection to several people. So he's got a psychiatrist, and no one except Blake and Sasha know that he's completely out of his mind. So how did you create that, and why is he free? How come nobody thought to, like, you know, put him away and throw away the key at all?
Well,
seriously,
as the story goes on,
I wouldn't want him near me too much.
Yeah, it's funny because he's a novelist that is losing, you know, track of reality, and people ask me, is that based mm-hmm. on you? And I'm like, no, I don't have McGowan syndrome. And as far as I know, I haven't lost track of reality yet, at least. But
no, I don't think so.
But so he is a character who has spent some time in mental institutions, but they've deemed that he's no threat to anyone, and so he has been mm-hmm. released to write his novels. And so it's fun to climb inside the mind of the different characters that you're writing from, especially when you do use mm-hmm. different point of views. You're able to really get into their thoughts and their motives and the intentions that they have throughout the story. And so it's always kind of enjoyable for me to get to know the characters. People ask, well, how did you know that? And I'm like, I didn't know it. I found out as I wrote it. And I tried to listen to the character.
It came to you,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, you have something on the back cover, and I'm going to just interject it in between all my other 9,000 questions here that I have. Where does this century-old cold come into this case? And I love the little symbols in the book, and I'm going like, okay, I have to try to figure out what that means. So how did you come up with that to add it in? Because that added more suspense. And as a reviewer, I mean, I read this book, and it didn't take me that long to read it. Then I reread it, and I'm going like, okay. I mean, I've read so many, and this really kept my interest. I'm so like, how did you come up with the little symbols and the code? How does that work into the plot?
Right. So as I was researching the book, I came across this book called Forgotten New York, and it's a collection of really interesting articles about the history of New York City and different places to go and things to see that most tourists don't know about. And so in this book, Forgotten New York, I came across a story regarding a gravestone in Trinity Cemetery up in New York City. And so while I was up in New York City doing research, I ended up going to this graveyard and finding the very gravestone that this book had mentioned. And on it is a code that was written many years ago, and no one knew exactly what the code meant for almost a century. And so finally then a newspaper decoded it and realized that it was actually a message being sent on this gravestone to others, and the message is "Remember Death," and that's been coded on this gravestone. And so, in the story, once Patrick discovers this this code, it ends up that Manny, the character we've heard about earlier, is using this code to communicate with him. And So Patrick needs to decipher some of the messages through the centuries-old code that Manny's using. And so it was really fascinating again. And I always try to go to the site where I'm writing about, because on the one hand, you can do research from books, from the internet, from Google or whatever you want to do, Google Maps and so on. But there's so many details that you can never get unless you're actually on the ground in that area, in that city. And so I always visit the place that I'm writing about and try to just look through the eyes of the characters and the people who live there. And so the research is something that, you know, I never really thought that much about. But when I was writing Every Wicked Man, I thought, you know, I really am enjoying this research. And when I got started writing years ago, I'll say I kind of dreaded doing research. But over the years, I found that I really enjoyed being on the ground and talking with people and getting to know, you know, the secrets about their cities.
I love doing research. Absolutely. It's one of my favorite things is to do research. And my nephews and my nieces, when they have to write a term paper, I help them do – I don't write it, but I help them do the research because it's fun to learn about a whole bunch of things. And I've recently learned about a whole bunch of things that nobody would ever really want to know about. But it's current issues, and it's giving me, like, you know, information for one of my shows that I'm doing in January on issues that are in the news. And like healthcare and the rising cost of healthcare and e-cigs and why they should be regulated and a few other things that I'm learning about that I didn't need to know. So this was interesting too. We have Manny, and you have him in custody. And how come he gets away? I mean, it's almost as if Patrick gives him a pass, or did he not do it on purpose? Did he do it on purpose, or was this because Manny is so strong? It's almost as if it's a real prison break, but, you know, no, he's not going to stop him. How come? I like Manny, though. I was glad you let him. I was glad he got away. I'm really glad. Seriously,
well, Manny does escape.
Sometimes the bad guy has to win.
But in the story, Patrick doesn't want him to and does try to stop him, but it seems like Manny has some inside information about how to get out of the FBI headquarters in New York City, the field office in New York City. And so, again, doing research, I went to the field office and actually toured part of it to try and get a realistic view of what it's like, and, you know, and then I let my fiction writing brain take over from there and say, now if I was trapped in here, how would I try to get out? And then let Manny do what my brain told me I would try to do if I was trying to get out.
But how do you get people? I mean, if you walk up to somebody, well, you're who you are, you're famous, and you're Stephen James. But if someone else wanted to get somebody to help them do research, it's not that simple to get someone to help you do that. I mean,
well,
I was writing something and I said, it's hard. How do you get somebody to actually show you, you know, a field office or somebody in a cemetery to talk to you if you really want to know how something got there? How do you do that?
Well, very often I will just say, hey, I'm an author, I'm working on a book and I'm doing some research and I'm wondering if you could get me some information about this. And regarding the FBI, they do have a public affairs office that authors and movie makers, producers and so on can go to try and see if there's, specific information, because the FBI wants the information that's out there about the FBI to be as accurate as possible. Mm-hmm. And so in my books, you know, Patrick, for these last 10 years I've been writing these books, I've had relationships with some FBI agents and former agents. And so they've been really helpful in giving me insight and direction and how to do research. And of course, a lot of it ends up being you want to make things realistic, but you don't want to give anything away to people, right? So So some of the stuff I change for the books just so that, you know, it's clear that I'm not going to give any secrets away from the FBI about how to do things or get away with things.
No, you don't want to do that, trust me. So we have Sasha and Derek. Who are they? And how do they fit into this story?
Well, there are a variety of other characters within the story.
Yeah.
Blake, and he works for Blake is the kind of the mastermind that Manny works with. But I can't give too much away because we don't want to.
No.
I don't want to let readers in on any of the secrets and the twists that come up as the story progresses. But it is fun to try and introduce characters. And this happens to me whenever I'm writing. I introduce a character and I'm like, gosh, I really don't know what this character's role is going to be in the story. I don't know if they're good or bad or if they're going to have a twist at the end regarding the story. And so, in fact, the book that I'm writing right now, the next story that I'm writing, it's not a Patrick Bauer story, but I've thought that for years. I started writing it about a year ago. I thought I kind of know how it's going to end. But I was wrong. The characters that kind of came out of nowhere, and there's twists in it that I never would have imagined. And so so it's been fun over the last couple of months to see where this story goes. And so I introduce characters, try to make them understanding and believable, and then from there let them tell me where the story needs to progress to.
See, that's how some of the authors that were on the panel last 2 weeks ago, I had Dick Belsky and Marcia Casper Cook and someone we all love, John Land, Marilyn Levinson, and Alan Topol, and Carlin Eggers. And we talk about exactly that, how the characters drive the plot forward. But I added a little twist to it. I said, how did you name your character, and how did you decide what your character is going to do? You know, they're living, and how did you decide he was going to be this? And how did you decide Craig Page was going to do this? And how did you decide, like, Caitlin Strong was going to be a Texas Ranger? She's really great. So we talked about that, and then on February 11th, I'm going to brave it again. We're going to talk about dialogue versus first-person narrative. And this I do a lot of panel shows. It's fun.
Yeah.
And this way, actually, you said something before, and I might... You know, see if you want to do this also, probably in March. It's amazing that some of the authors actually do this research and go where the book is going to take place, and that I find even more fascinating because that makes it real. So we've got...
Every author has, a different approach. Some do detailed outlines and others don't.
Yeah.
And I have a podcast called The Story Blender. It's at thestoryblender.com, and we interview different authors, and very often this idea comes up, is this approach, is how does it differ from other people? But truthfully, I feel pretty strongly that the best way to write is more organically than outlining, and so it becomes something where that often they'll ask me on the panel just because they want the perspective of someone who doesn't plot out and outline the stories. And I find that the twists really come a lot more naturally to me. And the unpredictability of the story, you know, readers will read my stories and say, man, I never saw that twist coming. And I'm thinking, well, neither did I. I was writing the story and I had no idea it was going to happen like that. So it's more fun for me, and I think it's more unpredictable for readers.
Well, I can tell you that sometimes I actually figure it out right away.
Yeah.
And sometimes I wait till the very end and I'm going like, what? Are you serious? And then sometimes I go like, oh, God, I knew that. That doesn't happen too often, but when it does, I go like, how am I going to rate this book and how am I going to do it? And I just come up with something that makes it so wonderful because I don't write bad reviews ever. I write negative reviews. It's not me. But if I don't particularly get into something, which is rare, I'll just tell the publicist I pass rather than writing something bad. Or if they say, could you write a summary, then I'll do that, but you won't know if I like it or not. And then the author may say, did you like it? And I don't answer that one. I don't want to take the fib.
Yeah.
So we've got Timothy, and he seems to live in two separate worlds, the present yet delusional in some respects, and the past that he remembers something as a child. So how did you create these two different personalities in him? Because, I mean, I was able to tell where he was, but how did you create somebody that was in another planet at different times? He was just so different. That's how I like him, though.
Yeah, I like him too, and even though he's sort of losing track of reality and thinking back,
mm-hmm.
as an author, he's remembering some things from his childhood and wondering if this is imagination or memory. Like,
yeah.
is he remembering, what actually occurred, or is it just the imagination of an author taking a little moment and expanding it out? And I had this idea for the first line of a book, and so I thought this would be a really good opening line, but I haven't been able to use it for years, and so I decided to use the opening line in the story that he's writing about when this character was young. And so the opening line was something along the lines of, let's see if I can remember it. Mommy and daddy, they hurt people. And so I thought, that's a creepy opening line, like for a kid to say that. Yeah. And so I thought, I want to use this opening line, but it doesn't work for my novel, but it can work for the novel that this guy's writing within the novel. And so I ended up using that idea and then trying to, flesh out where would that go and who's saying that and why would, a kid say, my mommy and daddy, they hurt people. And where would that lead? It's just kind of, it's chilling because it comes from a kid, and also it's a promise that something really bad is going on, and so he ends up writing this story about this girl like that, and we as readers wonder, is he remembering this? Is he really basically the girl, or what's going on here?
Yeah, to me as an educator, if somebody said my mommy and daddy hurt people, I would automatically think that it's abuse of some type, and look further in. I've reported it quite a number of times, and unfortunately I was right every time. You have to, even if you're wrong, and you say to yourself, say to the person, I'm really sorry, but unfortunately you can tell, and so many people don't. But yeah, I would say, oh my God, his parents are bad, oh my God, they're beating people.
Yeah.
So Timothy is in trouble in his own mind. So how does Tessa relate to him? Because she sort of covers for him. She likes him too. I like Tessa.
Yeah, Tessa is, she's very smart. I think in this book she's 15 or 16 years old. And and so emotionally she's fragile. She's maybe like a 12 or 13 year old. But intellectually she has this amazing intellect that's maybe 20 or 21 years old. And so this dichotomy between her emotional immaturity and her intellectual acuity creates this character that's really kind of deep and interesting, and we like to spend time with her. And so she ends up reading some of Timothy's novels, and so it ends up that at a book signing, the two of them end up alone, and we don't know what's going to happen. If Timothy is going to attack Tessa, if he's going to do something unspeakable to her, what's going to happen? And things kind of spin off from there into an interesting, relationship isn't really the right word because they don't have a romantic relationship or anything like that. But there is an acquaintance or friendship that ends up kind of being produced between these two very different characters.
Well, before I forget, let me explain to everybody one more time. This is my final show for 2018. I'm taking a break for a while, and I'm going to start on January 3rd with New York Times author Mark Cameron, Oath of Office, the new Tom Clancy book. On the 8th, I'm going to do something very different. Pastor Michael Jones will be here. We're going to talk about his Begin to Serve organization and how they help people all over the world. On the 14th, Bo Wagner will be here with his network Exposed. On the 16th, I hope nothing goes wrong again with my timer on my show, Cindy McDonald, Mambo and Murder. And former FBI agent Michael Tabman and I are going to take on the issues that are in the news. I don't know which ones, but whatever ones he wants, that's what we're going to talk about. On the 21st, Gabriel Vajon will be there. And on the 23rd, a book that I read between yesterday and today, like almost 400 pages, Derek Boak, Chasing the Rabbit. His son has Asperger's Syndrome Spectrum, and we're going to talk about that and what Dylan is going through. So that's just part of January. The last one is the 29th, Dark Paradise. And we're going to start with someone else that everybody knows and loves in February, Brian Friedman, The Crooked Street. The 11th, The Panel. And the 13th, Douglas President Lincoln Child versus of the Dead. And that's just some of what I'm up to. And I've told I'm going to be up to a whole lot more, they said. So this is exciting. And all those authors, including Stephen James, Christmas is this week. So just go on Amazon and, you know, click on Add to Cart. That would help. Seriously. yeah, really. tell us about the senator. About the senator and his role in this particular, without giving anything away. Tell us about him. How he feels about the fact that his son killed himself, because we don't get to know him, but sort of, yeah.
Yeah, I mean this, the senator's son has taken his own life at the senator's home, and when we first meet this man, the senator, we are not sure as he. Responsible mm-hmm. because Patrick deduces that there was someone else present at the scene of this suicide, someone who could have helped, who could have stopped what's happening, but did not. And so he's trying to figure out who that was to find out, you know, more information about if the person had helped some and was responsible, or why he or she was watching what was happening. And so there comes a point where we start to wonder as readers, I wonder if it was actually the senator. Did he watch his son? Was he the one who was there? And I can't really tell readers, I can't really tell your listeners where that goes, but the senator's an interesting character, and I don't want to get into too much about what he knows and what he doesn't know, because it might ruin the surprises for readers.
Oh, yeah, I know. That kept me like, oh, my God. So I've always wondered about this. You know, you have a cell phone, and you got to be careful. And I was watching the news yesterday for 9,000th time, and they said, like, between 17 and 20 spam phone calls, and I can vouch for that, every single day. How do they track cell phones? Yeah, I know. I have this thing on my phone that says robocaller, don't answer, unknown person, possible spam, and I don't answer anything. If I don't know the number, I don't even bother. And if I know it's somebody asking for money, forget it. I know who it is too. So what technology does the FBI use to track cell phones and people? I mean, I have something on my phone called Find a Phone, but I don't use it because I don't really want to find anybody or their phone. So what kind of technology do they use? Yeah, seriously, I don't want to know.
I mean, the technology that's used today can track phones even if they're turned off. That's why, when the Olympics were over in China a number of years ago, they told people who were traveling to China, if you don't want to be tracked, you know, you have to take the battery out of your phone whenever you go over there and stuff. And it's just astonishing. Once you start to research what technology is capable of doing, I mean, most people's phones and their Fitbit, you know, watches and iWatches or Apple Watches and so on, that's tracking everywhere that you go, everything that you do. And so, like, basically, let's say that you go to a hospital. They can even tell if your phone goes into the operating room, they can tell that, and then maybe they'll target ads to you for knee replacements or something like that, because they tracked you to a certain doctor who does knee replacements, and now you're in surgery, and they're going to advertise micro marketing. Advertise something that would apply to your specific situation or recovery from that surgery. So there's one hotel chain that has basically started to micro market in cities let's say that you're in Atlanta and there's a storm, and so the airlines are canceling the flights. Well, people are going to be looking for what? A hotel to stay the night, right? And so So this one hotel chain has started to micro-market in cities where flights have been canceled. So it'll come up on their phone and say, you know, stay at this hotel tonight, 50% off or whatever. And they found that it's incredibly productive in the sense that a lot of people use the app and connect and come to their hotel. So it's a crazy world that we live in. And so sometimes I just don't even take my phone when I'm going somewhere. And if the right people look at your information, they can tell if you're out on a run and that they'll know, you know, that you're not home and can target your home.
I know.
So in times like that, I don't even take my phone with me. I don't want anyone, if they were tracking my phone. I just heard this week that there was a guy who hacked into someone's baby monitor and started speaking and saying he was in the room with the baby as this person was in the other room. And he said, don't come in. I'm in the room with your baby and all this stuff. But he just hacked into the baby monitor and was speaking through the baby monitor because anything that's connected up to the internet can be hacked. Whether it's a toaster, refrigerator, a cell phone, a watch.
Wow.
Yeah, if it's connected to the internet, it can be hacked, and it will be hacked eventually. Like self-driving cars can be hacked into.
I know.
And yeah, people have demonstrated that. So the more we connect to the internet, the more vulnerable we become. People who have ill intent.
Well, let me tell you, that was one of the term papers that my niece had to write. Self-driving cars and whether she agreed. Yeah, self-driving cars versus an electric cars versus gasoline cars or regular cars. And I learned a lot about that, and a lot of mistakes were made. A lot of people got hurt. People were sitting behind the wheel of the car, and it crashed. And who do you blame? But the insurance company is responsible, and the people that make it, not the person that owns the car. So that becomes kind of like a catch-22 also. So, I'll stick with my little $15 watch that I got from my hairdresser with little, you know, little pictures on it. Yeah, I don't have an Apple. I have an Apple phone, my cell phone, but that's about it. And then I know why my husband says to me, shut it off at night so nobody could bother you because you don't really want to know anybody at that point. But it doesn't mean anything. So we talk about, we have about 10 minutes, drugs, the research. What research into drugs did you do in this particular book? Because that was interesting, too. I'm learning a lot here.
Well, there is a certain plot that deals with the use of drugs. And so over the last number of years, I've done quite a bit of research on drugs, how to alter drugs, counterfeit pharmaceuticals for different storylines with my book. And so with this book, I ended up meeting with and consulting with, I'll just say an expert on how to alter different drugs through synthetic.
Oh, nice.
Synthetic means. Yeah. And so this doctor that I spoke with was quite helpful in giving me information about how to alter and change, you know, drugs. And so the information that's in the book is, you know, legitimate, although it's all fictional. But again, it goes back to that thing that we were talking about earlier, Fran, with research. You want the research, you want the information to be accurate, but again, then you take it fictionally and extend it out so that it's believable but not necessarily possible. That's what I'm shooting for.
Well, I try to find that drug. I couldn't find it. I don't know why, unless you made that one up or if it's real.
Yeah.
So Zane, and go like, wait a minute, where is this thing? And it's more like, you know, Novocaine, morphine, and a whole bunch of other ones all put together. Like, especially the ending. Could be lidocaine. Could be anything. So when Manny faces Ralph and Bowers and Blake, how did they interact? I mean, I love Manny. He's so good. But you have all of them together, and they're all evil. How did Manny get into being, you know, with Blake? How did he get into being, you know, not the nice person that he really is? Because he's really a good man. He means seriously. He could have killed Bowers a whole lot of times. No, really.
Well,
he's
he really is an interesting character because he has, you know that he's involved with some not so good things, but he also has the opportunity at different times to help people to save their lives, and he always seems to do that. Instead of take their lives, he seems to want to save and rescue people, even though he's working for this bad guy. And so as I work on the stories, I try to think through, okay, at the climax, which character is going to face off with which character? And Ralph, who is a big ex-wrestler and former Ranger, who works with Patrick at the FBI, ends up in a fight with Manny, who's just enormous. He's like a human mountain. He's just a huge guy. So they end up with kind of an epic fight at the end of the story, and then Patrick has to face Blake, who is an expert in, let's say, fighting and making people suffer. And so Patrick has to fight him. And so so as I think through the trajectory, sort of the direction that each character is going, I try to think through, you know, who will face off with who, and then again, just stay responsive to the story and to the direction that it might go, and so that even though I think I might know, I always try to adapt and go into the direction that seems most honest at that time of the story.
The only thing I didn't ask, because I didn't ask it, who does Patrick Bowers answer to? Who is he work for? Who is the person that has been placing him on this case? So he got on this case, but who has he worked for? Who is this main person?
Well, I'll say in the different books there are different characters who are kind of his boss.
Yeah.
And so after this book, you end up meeting someone named Margaret, who becomes throughout the series of the stories kind of his boss and a bit of his nemesis. She doesn't really believe in his approach. And as the stories move forward, she ends up having a bigger role throughout it. But in this book, it just wasn't as vital that I got into the specifics of who assigned him this case and so on like that.
Well, we have a relationship between before we have about 5 minutes, Bowers and Tessa. How does it change? I mean, how does she come to realize that he may be a wonderful person? So how does that change? You know, step-parents.
Yeah,
I was a step-parent a long time ago. And you wonder, how does it change?
You know, they start not really that close together emotionally, like as he is her stepfather. But throughout the story, she ends up discovering that, that she needs him in her life. And he ends up discovering that he really loves this kid and wants to do what's right for her and would do really just about anything for her to protect her, because he does care about her and about her mom. And so as a dad of three daughters myself, I've found that over the last decade, as I've been writing these stories, that they do tend to have this idea of what does it mean to be a dad? What does it mean to care for and love your girls with a fierce love, but also a sensitive love? And what does it mean to have, relationships with them in a positive way? And so it's been an interesting journey for me as a dad. To see parallels in the relationship of Patrick with Tessa in the relationship with my own daughters.
And that is, it's really, when there's more real life, it's really great.
Yeah.
So, where can everybody learn more about you? And when is the next book coming out, and when do I get it? Seriously. These are the questions I love to ask.
Well, people can go to my website, stephenjames.net, Stephen with a V, or you can order the books anywhere online, the major bookstores or booksellers online, and this one, of course, is called Every Wicked Man, and it's a great place to start the series. So if you like thrillers, if you like suspense, novels, mysteries with a psychological aspect to them and suspense, then I think this is a book that you'd like, you'd enjoy. And, so, and like I say, it's a great place to start reading about Patrick Bowers and his stories. So yeah, as far as the next book comes, well, we'll have to get that info to you once the book is a little further along at my publisher. But I will say that it's something I've never done before. It's a near future thriller.
Oh, good.
So it takes place 30 years in the future, and it'll be it will be out sometime next year.
Well, I always try to end my reviews. I don't know if you read what I wrote, but it's out there with 27 stars, seriously. And the title fits. If you look, read the book, people, you'll see that every wicked man actually fits perfectly with so many people in the story. That's all I'll say. It does fit.
Well, I appreciate
exactly
that.
Right.
Yeah,
did I caught that. I said, this is like, I end my review, and I usually say, you know, something like, you know, blah, 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 every wicked man. I like to end it with the title of the story, so it makes it make sense so that people understand that this didn't just come out of nowhere. And
nice,
it's beautiful out, so yeah. So I'm excited. Those of you that haven't bought your Hanukkah presents or Christmas presents, or you could start off with, you know, 4th of July or Valentine's Day or anything you want. I would seriously go online and, you know, buy all of Stephen James' books and Cindy McDonald's Mambo and Murder and John Land's Caitlin Strong series and Marcia Casper Cook, Never Too Late, and Victoria Templeton series, which is really hot. And I don't really read books like that, but, you know, she's a friend, and I think it was great that she's reading it. And I will see everybody back here on January 3rd when Mark Cameron takes the center stage with Oath of Office. Stephen, I want to thank you a million times. Would you ever do a panel show, you know, with a whole lot of people to talk about research and setting?
Yeah, I mean, sure, keep me in mind. And thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it, and happy holidays to everyone out there. And I hope it's a good season of joy and peace for people.
Me too. I hope 2019 brings everybody something good. Everybody have a great day, and bye.